Hello, and welcome to the Popmatic Podcast. I'm Brian.
And I'm Crystal. We're librarians at Nashville Public Library.
This podcast is where you can find reviews and recommendations of the best books, movies, and music available for checkout from the Popular Materials Department of the Nashville Public Library.
You can also learn about library programs such as concerts, film screenings, book clubs, author talks, and book signings.
In October, we get Undead Library Style. First, I revisit Mark Twain's The Diaries of Adam and Eve as part of Nashville's Twain and Twang celebration. Next, Amanda teaches us that classical music isn't what it used to be with her discussion of Noah Krashevsky. Closing the show, Clint and I give you some uber-creepy Halloween sleeper picks on DVD.
I can't believe you read that.
This review is dedicated to Steve. Mark Twain's bibliography is deep and broad, but largely unexplored by adults outside of their adolescent encounters with Tom Sawyer and Huck Finn. Twain and Twang, Nashville's citywide celebration of the works of Mark Twain, is a perfect opportunity to discover the true reach of his work. His anti-imperialist, anti-religious, and perhaps misanthropic views don't represent the values of some PTA boards. But we're all grown up now, and we can decide for ourselves what should be banned and what should be leather-bound. Ironically, though, it is Huck Finn that has been his most censored work. The library owns multiple copies of nearly every item in Twain's bibliography, but I suggest seeking out the Oxford Mark Twain imprint. These are hardcover reprints of every title's first edition. They faithfully reproduce page layout, typeface, and illustrations, as well as introductions and afterwards by contemporary novelists influenced by a given title. The entire series is forwarded by an insightful essay by Shelley Fisher Fishkin, say that three times fast, which places Twain's work in the larger scope of not only American letters, but world history. In short, Twain authored what it was to be an American for the rest of the world. Where should you start? I recommend the Diaries of Adam and Eve. Adam's diary is first. He's a clod. He doesn't understand Eve, and he'd rather leave and build himself a new shelter than try to comprehend this new creature who insists on using the pronoun we. Despite his initial reluctance, as they say in Jurassic Park, nature finds a way. Eve, on the other hand, is intelligent, insightful, and reflective. Her verbal skills far outshine Adam's. Though no god appears in the story, by the end of her diary, Eve comes to her own conclusion that probably a god created a place as beautiful as Eden. Much fuss is made over the first lines of novels. True to Twain's contrarian disposition, the diaries possesses one of the most beautiful and heartbreaking closing lines in all of American literature. Kneeling before Eve's grave, Adam thinks to himself, "Wheresoever she was, there was Eden."
I can't believe you listened to that.
Hey everybody, this is Amanda. I've got some new music to talk about today, but I want you to hear part of it before we begin our dialogue. Maestro, if you please. No, your player wasn't skipping. The piece was supposed to sound like that. For those of you who are still with us, that was the beginning segment from Noah Krashevsky's work Red Carpet, composed in 2007 and released on his album To Know and Not to Know. Krashevsky is a hyper-realistic composer, using acoustic sounds in conjunction with electronic sampling and editing to construct his music. The piece we just heard is a composite of ascending musical runs on alternating violins and trumpets, played over a somewhat continuous violin harmonic. It could be considered an exercise in frustration, because just as soon as you get used to a new voice, Krashevsky kicks that one out and dumps another one on top of it. I would really like to hear more of the French horn lines, but they're used for transient support only. The music is splatty and delicious, and after a while, you just have to keep listening so you can see what comes next. Its big Pachelbel-esque ending is somewhat unexpected, but still a nice contrast to its surrounding sonic environment. Like my college piano professor, Krashevsky received musical training from the legendary Nadia Boulanger. Even though we come from the same family of musical thought, I didn't know about Krashevsky prior to stumbling across his CD as I was browsing the library shelves putting together a display on modern music. I invite all of you to do the same at your local libraries because you never know what you might find. Krzyzewski is a very eclectic composer, and I'd like to take you now to the Church of Our Lady of Orgiastic Revelations and let you hear a vocal work of his. This piece is called Psalmus 23, and away we go.
Dominus regit et nihil mihi.
If you take all the different vocalizations as a whole, together with the organ-like supporting tones, the music makes a nice accompaniment for the Latin text. A traditional homophonic choral form emerges about halfway through, but with modern chord progressions and embellishments. I bet you've never heard Psalm 23 sound like this.
I can't believe you watched that.
This is Clint here with a offbeat Halloween pick for your Halloween night pleasures. Producer Val Lewton made 9 very distinct horror films throughout the early to mid-40s. His fourth and most strange is The Seventh Victim. Made in 1943, The Seventh Victim follows a young woman named Mary who goes to New York in search of her sister Jacqueline, who has mysteriously gone missing. Mary falls into a world of private eyes, struggling poets, and yes, a mixed-up cabal of pacifist Satan worshippers. As Mary discovers the pieces to the puzzle of her sister's life, the film falls into the realm of despair that's unlike any other horror film of the 40s. The Seventh Victim has the suspenseful set pieces and jump scares of any good thriller, but Lewton shows us that the true horror is the unfulfilled life. Now to Brian with an even more whacked film.
I'm going to kick things back a decade and talk about a film that came out in the early 30s, and that is Vampyr, directed by Carl Dreyer. It starts out like a normal vampire movie in that, you know, sort of a young nobleman, maybe a dreamer type, you know, goes to this obscure village in Transylvania. But sure enough, he meets this baron whose daughters are being victimized by a vampire. Slowly, the lead, David Gray, and the servants at the estate figure out that it's a vampire, you know, and things go down. After that, it just gets really weird and not normal at all. For one thing, the vampire is an old woman, and that adds a certain layer of creepiness. And also, a good portion of the narrative occurs via dreams and shadows that aren't connected to any of the other characters, or perhaps the astral selves of the characters themselves. It's never really explained, but like half of the movie takes place in a dream world. And then probably the best thing of all, too, is the characters keep saying to each other, "Do you hear that noise? I hear a baby screaming," or "I hear a dog barking." But the other characters don't hear it. And they're like, they don't, you know, amongst themselves, they're like, "We don't know what you're talking about. You don't hear it." But then on the soundtrack, there's all these baby screaming noises and animal noises that you could hear, but the characters don't hear. I think what really makes the films so weird, though, is that Dreyer's camera work is because he breaks all the normal editing rules. He breaks sightline matches and things like that. So you can never really tell where a character is looking or whose viewpoint it is. So that just makes the film read very different than a normal film, and it's very, very dreamlike. If you mix that with Dreyer's typical attention to detail and painterly-like framing, you just have a film that's not like anything else ever, probably, in the history of cinema. So the version that we have here at the library isn't just a DVD. It's a box set. It has a documentary about Dreyer. It has commentaries about the film that will explain all the things I talked about except better. There's essays about the movie, the original script, the novel that the story is based on, Carmilla by Sheridan Le Fanu, which is sort of a classic of lesbian vampire fiction. That's all included in the box set. It's really great. So if you're a goth kid and you haven't seen this movie, shame on you. If you're a film student and you haven't seen this movie, shame on you. So Vampyr.
Stay tuned for a very important announcement.
National Public Library presents Shocking Saturdays in October. Join us in the main library auditorium for your annual dose of shock and terror. All screenings begin at 2 p.m. On Saturday, October 3rd, it's time to visit the asylum. A polite warning, this house is not a home. We take a 1-week break for the Southern Festival of Books and return to terror on October 17th with Larry Cohen's It's Alive. Whatever it is, it's alive and deadly. On Saturday, October 24th, we conclude Shocking Saturdays with Nashville's own horror host, Dr. Gangrene. Dr. Gangrene will be here to serve up the lighter side of fright with Don Knotts and the Ghosted Mr. Chicken. So come to the library for Shocking Saturdays, if you dare.
You've been listening to Nashville Public Library's Pop-Matic podcast. For more information, please visit www.library.nashville.org.
That's on the interwebs.